From Selins Grove to Pittsburgh, Gettysburg to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, election reform efforts have failed at both the state and national levels. Now it is time for citizens to take election integrity into their own hands. Cleta Mitchell of the Election Integrity Network is here to talk about an upcoming Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit. Just as Punxsutawney Phil emerges from his burrow every year, so too does the Pennsylvania Turnpike raise tolls. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And the Supreme Court of the United States upheld the right of public sector workers not to be forced into a labor union. But the fight to protect those rights continues. So says Grant Gulliban of Americans for Prosperity on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry. Welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Cleta Mitchell of the Election Integrity Project in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. As expected from the beginning, Pennsylvania's new congressional district map will be decided by the courts. Speaking at the Pennsylvania Press Club this past week, Senate Majority Leader Kim Ward of Westmoreland County said the legislature was unable to come to an agreement with Governor Tom Wolf on the new district lines. Commonwealth Court set January 30th as a deadline for lawmakers and the governor to agree. They will now determine which maps to use. But whatever decision is made by that court will be appealed to the state Supreme Court, which is expected to have the final say. After his first pick for replacing U.S. Senator Pat Toomey withdrew from the race, former President Donald Trump has refrained from endorsing any other candidates in the GOP primary. But other party heavyweights are making endorsements. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz this week endorsed David McCormick, who is also expected to gain the backing of former Trump advisor Hope Hicks and Trump press secretary Sarah Sanders, who is now running for governor in Arkansas. Meanwhile, the Republican Party endorsement process moved forward, with former GOP lieutenant gubernatorial nominee Jeff Bartos holding a sizable lead in straw polls held to date. Powerful state labor unions have stymied efforts to privatize the state liquor store monopoly. Now Republicans are planning to send the issue directly to voters via proposed state constitutional amendment. Pennsylvania, along with Utah, are the only two states in the nation with government control over both wholesale and retail sales of spirits. The process has a long way to go, however, as constitutional amendments must pass two consecutive sessions of the General Assembly before voters get to weigh in. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Audits and investigations into suspicions of irregularities in the 2020 election continue, but an election reform bill was vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, and it is unlikely any major changes will be made before this November's election. So now it is time for citizens to step in. Cleta Mitchell is Senior Legal Fellow at the Conservative Partnership Institute, and she is Director of the Election Integrity Network, which will hold an Election Integrity Summit in conjunction with the upcoming Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. She's here to talk about how citizens can make a difference. Cleta, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Cleta, we're going to talk about specific details of the Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit. Before we get to that, why is it necessary at this particular point in time, as we stand here at the dawn of 2022 with major elections, particularly here in Pennsylvania for the U.S. Senate and governor and major elections all around the country, why are these summits necessary?
Well, it is very important that people understand that what happened in 2020 was a culmination of many years of building by the left of election infrastructure, that basically entities that they funded, particularly pushing for mail balloting, voting by mail, and almost they've created almost a separate infrastructure that parallels and works with and has infiltrated election offices all over the country. And we saw it come to fruition in 2020. And the only way we're going to be able as conservatives to reclaim our elections and to return election offices to the election administration offices and not Democrat turnout machines, is if we train people, recruit people to become part of election integrity task forces in their local areas. We have published a booklet on what is needed in every election office in the country. And we need people to come together, to be trained, to know what the situation is in the election offices and how we as conservatives can get engaged and make our voices heard. And it's a lot of work, but it's the way we're going to reclaim our elections and ultimately our country.
Well, there's no doubt that the left out-organized us in the last election. I know, Cleta, here in Pennsylvania, the House State Government Committee issued a report here last summer where they talked about how outside money came into government election bureaus and how the rules were changed and rules were applied differently in Democrat counties than they were in Republican counties. So you had all this taking place, and there's been a lot of talk about, was there stuffing of the ballot box or were the machines rigged? Forget all that. The election was really stolen, if you will, by all these ground rule changes in advance. So as an individual, if I'm listening to this interview, what can I do to try to help ensure that we have a fair election in 2022?
Well, that's why we're having this conference. We're having an Election Integrity Summit March 31st, Thursday, March 31st. It is a one-day session in Harrisburg, and it's just the day before the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, where conservatives from across the state will come together. And we're devoting this one day to here is what you can do. And we'll have training. We'll have, these are not just to hear a bunch of speakers, but it is to have breakout sessions to talk about such things as how to form a local election integrity task force. How do you research what's going on in your local county election office? Who is doing business with your county election office? What kind are they still getting this money from these left-wing groups that flowed from Mark Zuckerberg and his wife to these very left-wing organizations that then flowed into these election offices? And so there are so many things we need to do. Clean the voter rolls. We need to have people who are knowledgeable and are present to know what to do and are present to see the logic and accuracy testing of voting systems. I just have to say that there's no silver bullet to this. It is what you just said. It is citizens getting off the couch, saying, I'm not going to sit by and let these people wreck our election system. And so come to the summit on March 31st. Sign up. You have to sign up separately for the Election Integrity Summit and register for that. And then we hope that people will register for the full conference that begins the next day. But look, this is, our country is really at a crossroads, and it's really important for conservatives, patriotic Americans, to say, we're not going to go down without a fight. And Pennsylvania is ground zero for that. So we want to help Pennsylvania reclaim control over its elections.
Well, we do know that there's going to be no election reform or changes headed into this year's election because Governor Wolf has vetoed the legislation that passed the legislature to make reforms, Cleta, that actually many election directors and even the state election department had asked for, yet the governor saw fit to veto it. So you're right. This does put us back into the laps of citizens. And I realize that there'll be a whole hour or more spent on explaining this, but how do you even begin putting together a local election integrity task force?
I would tell you that at Conservative Partnership Institute, which is where I work, we have established an election integrity network, and we have a website called Who's Counting. I have a podcast, Who's Counting, with Cleta Mitchell, and our website for election integrity is www.whoscounting.us, and we have published the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure. And there is, and you can download that guide, and it tells you exactly how to create a local election integrity task force, all the steps, the different kinds of expertise that's needed in any given county. And I will tell you that that is what we did in Virginia in 2021. We know this works. And because we had citizens who became engaged in their local county election integrity task forces, and they were there at the election offices day in, day out, watching, attending all the election board meetings of that county, and they learned things, they heard things, they stopped bad things from happening. They were able to say, this is not the way this is supposed to be done. And they were only able to stop those things because they were there. And we have people from Virginia who are willing to come and talk to the people in Pennsylvania and say, this is what we did. This is what we hope will help you do. But we made Virginia kind of the beta site for 2021. It worked. It made a huge difference. And we want other people in other states to follow that model.
You referenced the fact that Pennsylvania, Cleta, is ground zero here. And, of course, we have an open seat for the U.S. Senate with Senator Pat Toomey retiring. And as we all know, we're at 50-50, so we can't afford to lose anywhere. What other states around the country are you planning to have these summits in?
Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, as we said, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada. And each of the states are slightly different, but these are states all of which experience the onslaught of left-wing money flowing into the election offices in 2020. And they're all states where people have become very distressed and upset about what happened in 2020. And we want to try to marshal that energy and that concern into building a permanent infrastructure. The left never stops. They never go away. And we're never going to have the kind of financial resources that they have on their side. They've literally spent hundreds of millions of dollars, honestly, in this area in the last decade. But we can overcome that if we have people who are trained and knowledgeable and are present in the election offices, if they're present as poll workers, poll watchers. There's just a whole lot to do between now and November. And we've got to get a handle and make sure that this absentee voting that was approved by the legislature in Pennsylvania 2 years ago, now 3 years ago, that it's actually conducted in accordance with the law.
And it is very important for everybody to understand, if you feel the 2020 election was not fair or there was chicanery, the rules obviously were applied differently. If you want to do something about it, the time has come to stop complaining and get off the couch and learn how to go out and make a difference as we go into 2022. We have been talking with Cleta Mitchell about the Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit, going to be March 31st in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania, a lead-in to the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. You can get complete information on all of the above and register at paleadershipconference.org. And as a note, you need to register for the summit and the conference separately, but you can do both at that site. Cleta Mitchell, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, and we look forward to seeing everybody in Pennsylvania at the Election Integrity Summit on March 31st.
The Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission has once again rung in the new year with a toll hike, this as it continues to rack up massive debt. For details, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi, who have this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the executive director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. As we start 2022, and happy new year to you, and happy new year belated to our listeners.
Happy new year to you as well.
We come back to a topic that you've researched a lot, and every year it marks the beginning of the new year.
It's very tolling.
It is very tolling, yes. And we're going to talk about the turnpike. Frank, I looked up this statistic. Mm-hmm. From 1956 to 2004, there were 6 toll hikes on the turnpike. Since 2009, in your latest policy brief, which is available at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, mm-hmm. you point out that there's been a toll increase every year since 2009.
Yep. 14.
Why?
Why? Because we can. Really, this goes back to Act 44 of 2007. Back in 2006-ish, 4-ish, 5-ish, the governor and the legislature decided, hey, we need to fund transportation a little bit better than we already do. We need to work on a plan. So the plan they came up with was tolling Interstate 80. PennDOT would still own Interstate 80, but the Turnpike would toll it. And the tolls would then be transferred to PennDOT, who would then use it for roads, bridges, and mass transit. At the time, it was going to be at $900 million a year. Well, funny thing happened on the way to the forum, and that is the federal government does not allow you to toll their roads for purposes other than maintaining those roads. And even at that, you need permission. So they were denied. Well, the denial just shifted the plan a little bit. and the Turnpike was still on the hook for paying PennDOT, but the amount went from $900 million a year to $450 million a year. $250 million went to Mass Transit, $200 million went to road and bridge work, and they just decided to issue bonds against what's called mainline debt, and that's debt against toll revenues themselves. So basically, the governor and the legislature in 2007 looked at the Turnpike and said, you look like a piggy bank, start paying. And as a result, in order to pay for those bonds, you know, $450 million a year for, well, through for a lot of years, that we'll talk about the change in a second, that had to come out of somewhere. So it's coming out of Turnpike tolls. And as a result, they keep going up. Since 2009, if you're doing cash or toll by plate, those tolls have gone up 235%. For those of you with the Easy Pass, it's gone up 66% because they're trying to encourage more people to use the electronics. So in those early days, those raises weren't as bad as the cash or toll by plate.
What's happened to the debt for the Turnpike Commission? Basically, its job was to build the Turnpike and administer it, and then they were turned into this piggy bank to say, we're going to fund transportation. So what's happened to the debt at the commission?
Sure. Back in 2007, the year Act 44 was issued, total bonds. Now, there's three areas in which the Turnpike can levy bonds against. Toll revenue, i.e. the mainline bonds, oil franchise tax, and the motor license fund. But the latter two, oil franchise and motor license fund, cannot be used for anything other than repairs to the Turnpike itself. So you're left with mainline bonds as the only option. Total of those three in 2007 was $2.5 billion, of which mainline was $1.66 billion, about 67%. As of May 31st, 2021, which is the end date of the most recent comprehensive annual financial report for the Turnpike, that total debt went from $2.5 to $15.8 billion. The mainline debt went from $1.66 to $14.31 billion. Mainline debt is now 90% of all debt the Turnpike owns. That is an incredible jump, 760%, almost eight times as much today in 2021 as there was in 2007.
On a per-vehicle basis, Frank, how does that debt work out?
On a per-vehicle basis, and again, it's all classes. Class 1 are passenger vehicles. Class 2 through 9 tend to be commercial vehicles. It's like $84 a car, per car, to pay that debt off. Now, in contrast, if you just travel the length of the Turnpike, the main line, and that would be from New Jersey to Ohio, that's 359 miles. And if you were a cash user, you'd pay $95.30. And that's class one only. You know, trucks obviously pay more, class two through nine. So passenger car. So $84 to pay the debt, you're getting $95. If you were to use your Easy Pass, it only charges you $47. So obviously, if you're using the Easy Pass at $47, yet you owe $84, or the Turnpike owes $84 per car in debt, you're not even covering that debt. So the Turnpike is in a heap of trouble, to say the least.
On that note, you've written before about how the pandemic has affected traffic. You have some updated numbers that you put in your brief. How is the mixture of traffic on the Turnpike, and what are the levels like overall?
Mm-hmm. Right. The mixture of traffic has changed greatly. In 2012, fiscal 2012, which is 10 years ago from this CAFR, you had passenger vehicles making up 87.1% and commercial vehicles 2 through 9 remaining the other 12.89%. And so that mix was pretty decent, but it has shifted. In a decade, you're down to 81.2% passenger vehicles and 18.8% commercial vehicles. So passenger vehicle usage has gone down 6%. Well, that doesn't sound like much. Chances are they're using other roads. And the more use those other roads get, then those roads get damaged. Now, granted, passenger cars don't do as much damage as the trucks do, but now you've got more truck usage on the Turnpike, so that road is going to absorb more damage. And again, that money's not going to them, it's going to PennDOT. So the Turnpike is going to have to figure out a way to fix their own roads as truck traffic gets a little more prevalent, and simply because trucks and commercial vehicles can pass the cost of the tolls on to their customers. Passenger vehicles don't have that luxury.
Frank, you had mentioned at the outset that there's some type of change that's coming to that $450 million payment that the Turnpike is making to PennDOT. What is it? When does it happen and why?
It didn't take long for folks to realize that this $450 million, which was to end in 2057, mind you, was not sustainable. So if you recall back in 2013, the governor and the legislature passed Act 89, which gave us our wonderful gas tax increase. And the change was in the fiscal year 2023, which is this July, the payment drops to $50 million as opposed to $450 million, with the caveat that that $50 million has to come from current revenues and not borrowing. Net toll revenues are about $1.2 billion a year. Side note to all that is, okay, the PennDOT was getting $450 million. Now they're going to get $50 million. So they need to come up with a new way to fund roads and bridges and mass transit. And, you know, one of the things we say in this brief is no one ever mentions cost or efficiencies. Here at the Institute, we've done a lot of work with on the Port Authority. We looked at their finances and their traffic, passenger riders and whatnot, and that's just obscenely out of whack compared to other national systems, even Philadelphia. And so no one ever mentions that. No one ever mentions maybe reducing the prevailing wage law for some of these municipalities and state roads so that that can be done at a lower cost. And so we tend to look at that and say, well, why not the cost? Why is it always going to the taxpayer and picking their pocket? Because here we are. You know, 2007, they thought they had it solved. We're now in 2022. And they're not happy. They're talking about tolling the bridges, certain bridges on Interstate 80, 79, and 95. They're talking about charging cars a per mile tax because they've pushed better fuel efficient cars. They're not getting as much money out of the gas tax as they thought they would. And they're in the same pickle they were 15 years ago.
Frank, great stuff as always. And we will be watching what happens as 2022 unfolds with transportation funding. If you would like to read this brief and look at some of the archives on this work, we always encourage you to visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Frank Amrath, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Informing public sector workers of their rights and protecting those rights against union abuse remains an ongoing effort, as we learn from Grant Gulabon of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Whatever their views on the proper role of state government may be, it's fairly safe to say that most Pennsylvanians agree on at least a few common principles. These would likely include A, protecting individuals' privacy by safeguarding their personal information, B, that state government be open and transparent when doing business on behalf of the citizens that it represents, and C, that workers have a say over their paychecks, who they associate with, and who speaks for them. Recently, the Pennsylvania House Labor and Industry Committee voted on several bills that are designed to strengthen the Commonwealth's commitment to upholding those principles. House Bill 844, sponsored by Representative Dave Rowe, would ensure the confidentiality of sensitive personal information and protect the privacy of Pennsylvania's workforce by prohibiting Social Security numbers and home addresses of public sector employees from being proper subjects of collective bargaining. House Bill 845, also sponsored by Representative Rowe, would promote openness and transparency by requiring that any proposed public employee collective bargaining agreement be made available on the public employer's publicly accessible internet website within 48 hours. And that the proposed agreement must be posted online 2 weeks prior and 30 days following the signing of the collective bargaining agreement. The posting should include the following information: A statement of the terms of the proposed collective bargaining agreement, and B, an estimate of the cost of the public employer associated with the agreement. This legislation would also establish the proposed collective bargaining agreements and any documents presented by the public employer or received from the employee organization in the course of collective bargaining are to be public records subject to the Pennsylvania Right to Know law. Finally, House Bill 2042, sponsored by Representative Kate Klunk, would ensure that Pennsylvania public employees are regularly notified about their right to refrain from joining or paying dues to a public sector union. This legislation would help ensure that the Commonwealth's public employees are fully aware of their First Amendment rights to join or refrain from joining a union, and that neither Pennsylvania government employers nor public sector unions can infringe upon this right. If enacted, this bill would require government employers to annually inform non-union member public employees, all new employees, and all employees returning from absence of their right to refrain from joining a union or paying dues as a condition of public sector employment in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania public employees have not traditionally enjoyed the freedom of association that employees in dozens of other states have for decades, but in June 2018, the Supreme Court ruled in Janus v. Ask Me that this is a First Amendment right for all public employees in the United States. In the Janus case, the Supreme Court clarified that, quote, extraction of agency fees from non-consenting public sector employees violates the First Amendment, and that, quote, neither an agency fee nor any other payment to the union may be deducted from a non-member's wages, nor any other attempt be made to collect such a payment unless the employee affirmatively consents to pay. By agreeing to pay, non-members are waiving their First Amendment rights, and such a waiver cannot be presumed. Now, House Bill 2042 also serves another purpose, which is to remove unconstitutional statutory language from Pennsylvania law called the Fair Share Law, which is in conflict with the Janus decision. These common sense bills were all reported from the committee on party line votes, with several of the minority party committee members, including the Democratic chairman, voicing strenuous objections to their provisions and claiming that the legislation is not necessary. While such opposition was not unexpected, many observers might not be aware of the irony involved in these objections being raised by these members just as the full committee was about to vote on the bills. You see, earlier last fall, in November of 2021, the full committee held a hearing discussing the topics contained in these bills and also invited numerous individuals and groups to testify, including those with viewpoints opposed to the majority members of the committee. Yet instead of taking the opportunity to voice their concerns in that forum, those groups declined to testify, and the Democratic members of the committee declined to participate in the hearing, instead choosing to hold a press conference downstairs from where the hearing was taking place. Thankfully, the time for this particular act of political theater has passed, and hopefully this important legislation protecting Pennsylvania public employees and the taxpayers who pay their salaries will be taking center stage before the full House of Representatives in the very near future.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. As mentioned at the top of the program, it is once again time for the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The premier annual grassroots conservative event will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and U.S. senator, and as mentioned, an added feature this year, a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.